on highways. Stay in your homes. Stay in your homes.
Live from the Huffman Book Group studio in Doppeltown, USA, it's Necro and the Pod, the hosts, Mike Spuffle and Mike Moncada, episode 59, J. Knight's Risen, the story of a man and the thin line between heroics and doing anything you can to get into a lady's pants. And now,
military orders are subject to summary execution. Stay in your homes. Repeat, Comrade Channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways.
This sure is a comfy couch.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hello. No, that isn't. My voice hasn't changed. We have a special guest.
Yes, we do.
Joining us on Necronomapod.
It's, Doppeltown's own, former Doppeltown's own,
Little Laurie, Lewis. Say something pithy.
I'm back from the dead, also known as Tour.
Who isn't back from the dead?
This time of the year, you do feel like every morning you have risen from the dead one more time,
and then you go outside and face the minus degree weather and think, yep. I'm dead again.
Dead again. I was looking at the street as we were pulling up here, and I was thinking, my God, this is an ugly damn town.
Doppeltown is an ugly town.
I'm tired of the mountains of snow.
In February. Anyway, snow's everywhere.
Blah, blah, blah. Weather.
Drink.
At least we don't live in Chicago.
We could be worse. Could be Chicago. Anyway, so we read a book.
We did read a book.
Yeah.
We did.
We read a book on the strong recommendation of one of our listeners, one Emphirio. Ooh. So,
have we figured out what gender Emphirio is yet?
Yeah, he's a dude.
Oh, he's a dude.
Yeah. He's a dude.
Yeah, totally. All right. And I also know where he got his name from.
Oh, what?
It's an old Jack Vance sci-fi fantasy novel. All
right.
Yeah. I recognized it right away because... That's just how nerdy I am.
You're smart.
King of the nerds.
And I'm staring at a Jack Vance treasury right as we speak.
Fun.
Anyway, so...
So we did read the book.
Should we get into this book?
Yeah. Let's do it. We've been on a roll of jumping into the books.
I know.
So we might as well...
Let's just do it.
Banter?
No, we usually don't banter. No, we haven't bantered in a long time.
No,
so.
We don't banter.
Okay.
No.
All right, diving in now.
All right, here he goes.
Into Risen. The trust tree. Let's go.
Risen by J. Knight. Never heard of this book. Never heard of this author. Turns out it's a pseudonym.
Who's it a pseudonym for?
A guy named... I can't remember his first name now, but his last name is Stranad. Strnad.
In Italian, stunad means like an idiot.
Yeah.
You
think?
Really? You stunad.
It sounds kind of Czech or something.
I think it might be Czech or something, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's got this successful career as a writer, apparently, writing TV scripts and comic book scripts and stuff like that. But he went and wrote himself a novel.
All right.
A horror novel. And, I'm just going to jump right in. I'm going to say I like this book quite a bit.
Okay.
cricket.
Okay.
What about you, Little Lewis?
I didn't hate it.
You didn't hate it.
I also didn't hate it. So we're totally in agreement.
I didn't love it. I think I would say... I guess I liked it in some ways. Yeah. There were some things I really liked about it, but there were some things I had a problem with. I'll just say it that way. I had reservations.
You sound like me, Laurie Lewis.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-oh. How I am with most books.
Yeah, I know.
No. There's things I like. There's things I had a problem with.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying you both have the same streak of pure cussedness.
Yes. And that's why I'm here.
Well, so Laurie Lewis, do you read a lot of horror?
I've read, when I was younger, I read like, you know, the breadth and depth of Dean R. Koontz.
Dean R. Koontz.
And of course, and Mr. Stephen King.
Yes.
And this was back when I was in high school and in college.
Very,
I was obsessed with those type of books.
And this is a very Stephen King-y book.
Yes, I agree. I think that in some ways, you know, it's the whole, Stephen King is really interested in small town. Oh, yes. A small town and how kind of the dead waters of that small town can kind of bring to life great horror. I know. And
it's like Stephen King's little hothouse experiments where he sets up a situation among a community and just sets it going. He did it with Salem's Lot. Mm-hmm. Most recently he did it with that. Literally, he like turned a community into a hothouse. He put a dome over a town.
Of course he did.
And let things go from there. And that's kind of what happens here.
Kind of.
Well, you know, we had read I think it was two books back, The Auctioneer.
The Auctioneer, yeah.
So this, to read this book after reading that book, because it's so close on the tail, so I still had The Auctioneer in my head. Mm. And The Auctioneer was a much better book.
Okay. Yes.
So I had a hard time with this book because that book was better.
Yes.
And it very similar in a way, this idea of what happens when sort of an outside evil enters a town and then the effect, the decay of the Walmarting, let's say.
Or like the Mark Twain story, the corruption of Hadleyburg, you know, where a guy comes into town and just turns the town on its head.
Yeah.
By revealing.
Or the Music Man.
Or the Music Man.
You know
what? This is exactly like the Music Man.
It is like the Music Man.
I think here was my issue. I felt like sometimes the characterizations of each of these people, the main characters, for example, Brant. He's the dude who is kind of the first person hero of this book.
Sure.
And his dialogue or his monologue or whatever you want to call it, his interior story that's happening is actually pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But when he sits down to write something, I felt like, what is he trying to accomplish? It felt too hokey to me.
When
Brant was writing about the town, and he's there's that little exposition moment where he's actually what he actually wrote for the journal.
Yes.
And I just felt like, I didn't like it at all. And maybe that was Knight's purpose. That was this guy's purpose, to kind of make a character that is obviously small town, and this is why he's small town, because
he has big town aspirations. Well,
he comes from a big town. Remember, he moved there recently, a couple years before, because he was in a big town, but now he's in a small town. And he's finding that the small town does have its charms, also has its limitations.
That's right. He thought it would be. He romanticized it.
He romanticized it, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think in this book, he's really, you know, he's obviously the proxy for the author, who is kind of working through his own, I suspect, working through his own feelings about small town life and big town life. And
well, I'm sure this character and the boy are proxies for the author.
You are right. Absolutely.
Two different aspects.
I thought for sure that it was Brant who was the main character, just because he's the first one. He's your entree into the book. But eventually you get into the head of Tom, who is easily the most likable character.
You know what? I knew it was going to be him. I knew it was, and here's why I knew. Because he was introduced really early in the story.
Yep.
And also, because once you start hearing the story about Eloise, and you find
Eloise!
You're always causing trouble, Eloise. No, it felt like at that time when they talked about the survivor, it was a young man.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So I started thinking, okay, it's not
You mean
Brant.
Back in the Eloise story.
So I kind of saw, like, I knew that Brant wasn't going to make it.
Yeah.
Can we back up from the book just a little bit as far as what is the appeal of using the small town metaphor? What do you think? Why do you think writers gravitate? Because there's the big city books,
especially
are usually zombies and
yeah.
I think it's look right here on the spine. It says horror.
Yeah, I
think when you think about horror, it's a natural fit. It's a natural fit that you would create a horrific event in some place that you never expect it. Like, people are always saying,
but,
when something bad happens in a small town,
but
people are like, oh, we never expected this to happen here.
Right, but it's small.
Lock our doors here.
But it's funny because,
but
horror uses small town all the time.
I know.
So it's not unexpected. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. In a way, it's like, of course they do.
Yeah, it's not unexpected by people who read horror. But horror in the real world, it's a kind of what makes it horror is the fact that it's happening in a place that generally you wouldn't expect. It's the car coming up the long driveway to the farmhouse, and two thugs coming out and killing everybody in the house.
But now,
also
but,
known as Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah,
but I think
or In Cold Blood.
But I think it's sort of like the vampire story, where even a reader is going to, oh, bites on the neck.
Yeah.
You know, blood yeah. drained. Oh, ding, 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 vampire. I wonder if it's all one of those contrivances or genres that, oh, small town, something creepy is going to happen.
Yeah.
The whole, you kind of, you're waiting for the next
dirty laundry of the town's going to come out. And
you're waiting for the next dead foot to already, step on ahead.
Right. It's already. Yeah. So I'm wondering, and this book was written, what, 10 years ago?
10, 15, mid-90s, something
but
like
you
that.
Know what I have to say? There's one thing I did like. I liked the idea. I liked his idea about a town coming back from the dead. Because
well, this reminded
that
me
was
of,
fun. That's a fun idea.
This reminded me of Pet Sematary. Because the resurrection has its price.
Right.
Oh, it's great. We're alive now. Yeah.
But where's the
but what,
what's the price?
What's the price?
The thing that it reminded me most strongly of, in fact, it almost annoyed me a little bit because it was so reminiscent of that, is Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah, I had that. I thought of
that
a lot too.
Yeah, because it's that whole it's the mid-50s communist scare horror where your friends and neighbors one day they're you're good red-blooded Americans. And the next day, overnight, somehow they get converted into communists or in basically the Body Snatchers into aliens. But they act the same way, more or less.
Right, exactly. Like,
really,
life goes
you
on.
You can't really tell.
Deputy Hawes, you know, he does his job.
Yeah, unless you actually see the person dead in this thing, you don't know that they've changed. But they do act a little, they do act differently, and they've come under the sway. You know, it's like
have purpose. Some of them who had no purpose. It's a small town, right?
Yep.
There's Deputy Hawes, for example. He's this dude who falls asleep, you know, in the car, and he's kind of a joke in a way.
Yeah.
He suddenly has purpose after he's dead.
Oh yeah.
See, that was risen. That was the one thing that I was taken by was that the only thing that seemed to be the downside of resurrecting was that other people were going to be forced to be killed and resurrected.
Yeah.
In the big picture of the story, what is the price?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I
mean, what is it? Are you going to go to hell? Are you?
I don't think so, though. I think
Do we know in the book what
the price is that they die?
The price is that they die and they come back.
But they think it's better. They think Seth is going to take them to somewhere much better.
Yeah,
so is the price that if you don't want to die, you're going to be killed anyway? Is that the bad thing? What's the bad thing?
Well, it's the removal of your free will.
Is that the bad thing?
Yeah, because you think. I mean, all these characters that come back, they think they're making this choice. That the choice is so obvious. Of course, you're going to follow Seth because he's awesome.
Makes sense. I mean, this is like the best thing since I don't know.
It's
sliced bread.
It's sliced bread. Yeah. No, it's the do we dare say this? It's also a book about religious conversion.
Well, so any kind of conversion.
Any kind of conversion. But it's, this one specifically, it's dying and rising
being
again.
Reborn.
It could not be more Christian.
Except that it's not, because, of course, it's Set. Because
it's not. It's Seth, yeah.
Also known as Set,
a minor
god of mayhem
Egyptian
and
deity,
disease and horrible things and death.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it has a number of very sophisticated layers, I think, that he juggles really well.
Spiritual element to it.
Yeah, he juggles them really well. He keeps those levels operating. I mean, as a read, as a lecture, like one damn thing after another, this book has some real velocity. You read it in like 25 minutes.
Yeah,
I read it in a day. I read it in 3 days.
You read it while you were on the pot.
I read it in 3 days.
Yeah, it took me longer than that, but you know.
Yes, because you fall asleep.
I fall asleep.
Occasionally.
So,
and also because you work all the time. Because
I work all the time.
Not working
I read
all, the
all
time.
Day, every day.
So, Laurie Lewis, what were the parts that you liked
about it? I liked the idea. I liked the idea of using this kind of minor Egyptian deity set to kind of create this stage, this basically like coup, more or less, starting in a small town and spreading out.
Yeah,
silent
coup.
Exactly. Of course, of course it's doomed to fail, right? And
well,
you hear that later. You find out when you uncover some of the mysteries, like Eloise, for example.
Yeah.
You know, who is Eloise? Who is she?
Yeah, I know. So what happened to Eloise? Were you sucked in for a minute by the red herrings? There's a couple of really, I thought, pretty good ones.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that.
I was more taken by the mackerels.
Really? The red mackerels?
I was more into the snapper.
I like the pink pilchards.
What were the red herrings to you? I always thought it was the Undertaker. So
really?
From the beginning.
What? Well, I know a name like Jed Grimm. Come on.
Yeah. Do you know why he always thinks? I'm speaking directly to our listener here. The reason he always knows what's coming is because he reads the end of the book.
I did it
first.
I did. I do have to say. Okay, I do have to say that halfway through the book, I did jump to the end because I wanted to confirm my suspicions that, the boy's going to live and it's going to be the Undertaker.
Yep.
And I went to the end like, yep. All right, I can continue reading.
Okay.
That's hilarious.
But I knew from the
beginning. What else did I
It's read? Always the Undertaker.
So the red herrings were that you thought it was Reverend Small. You thought that there was one memory of the old guy...
Franz Klempner, him? Or yeah. Are you talking about Doc Milford?
Is he? No, I think Franz is the guy who has that memory when he's really young. He had a friend who was a girl named Ellie.
Oh yeah, see, I did not pick up on that story. Somehow I missed that.
Yeah,
little,
and that's and that's all. It's that the little story is only there. It's there for a couple of reasons. The first reason I'll talk about a little bit, but the other one was to act as a red herring. So when his wife stands up and says, "I remember Eloise." Like, there's a woman named Ella. Something horrible happened to that girl.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't. It was a town.
Yeah. I completely missed that. I don't know if maybe I just didn't read deeply enough in that little... Because, I didn't skim it, obviously. I actually
read it. Yeah.
I definitely read it. But, there's something...
Yeah, no,
there's
really
certain things that stick and certain things that don't.
Right, and it's funny how a book, to three different people can be a different experience. Sure. I love that. But the thing is, ultimately, I think that this book... is going to be good pulp for a lot of people. I think and I mean that in pulp as in the good pulp, because there's some bad pulp out there, and then there's good pulp. And this is something that is absolutely delicious and chewy, and you can absolutely sit down and read it in a few days, and you'll enjoy most of the book. You might there might be some things you don't like, but I think most people would pick it up and enjoy it.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say, the other reason that he used that little story is that he does that with all the characters. There's a few... arguably major characters in here, but even the minor characters you find out a lot about, so you really get a sense of, like, you find out about all this backstory of these people just before they're killed, so you get this really get the sense of the the real flavor of the town and how everybody kind of fits together and that they have a past and a future. Like, remember the story of the town drunk?
That he's
a math savant. And you have all the story about his mathematics, and they didn't really do anything with that.
He
but you
died
know what?
Early, it, too.
Yeah,
and
he gets
I thought
early.
Maybe there was a reason why they were talking about him. Like, maybe Seth has a plan for certain people in this town, and that he wasn't just going to convert everybody. That's what I thought at first.
But eventually he just starts using it just to add depth and flavor to the story, and it really works because you learn a lot. And that kind of background material never bogs down the plot because it keeps clipping along. So, it's really, that part was really well done. And it was an easy way to, throw in red herrings.
You know what, though? I have to go back and qualify what I just said about most people would like this book. Most people who like the genre of horror books would like this book.
Would like this book.
And it's funny, I just read on the front here, there's a quote from the Charlotte Austin Review that says, J. Knight has crafted a masterful thriller closely in step with Stephen King and Dean Koontz.
I know. That's like
hello.
That's like faint praise. A, it's not the New York Times.
Yeah, exactly. It's
like, this is a book of
But you know what?
I said
those two people. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that I read when I was younger. So I think, if you're not a person who necessarily... If you're still into this type of genre, it's easy read.
Oh, yeah. No, totally.
It's interesting.
Totally. Yeah.
For me, this is not this is not the genre I prefer reading.
No.
I'm more into historical fiction, and I like, other stuff, and I like sci-fi and things like that, and things that are a little bit more based in reality than this, even though this is reality, but it's kind of a boring reality to me. I'm not as interested in reading about small towns.
Yeah, it's mundane reality with a twist. Yeah.
But see, that's the thing I enjoyed about it, were those the one couple has the other couple over for dinner.
Oh, yeah, then they kill them.
And then crack on the
coffee?
Side.
That was funny.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
There were all those little mundane scenes of murder.
I liked that little humor scene. That was funny. Yeah. And how it just, the murder is just like an everyday occurrence. Like, yeah. Oh, no big deal, you know. They'll be back in a bit, you know.
Yeah, and this
the cat and the cockroaches. That was horrible.
The cockroaches.
Yeah,
that was pretty horrible.
That was horrible.
That was horrible.
That was pretty horrible. But just like the mundane, the common everyday small town like gang of bored bullies, just doing small stupid shit.
Driving down
that, you know,
the main
can kill
drag
people.
Going 80 miles an hour.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
But yeah. The reconstitution of the burnt bodies, that was great.
Ooh,
also very
that was
cool.
Yeah, like literally, it's like a Mexican jumping beans, you know?
Yeah.
Jumping out of their literally skin
was,
like re...
It was there was a couple of good, really good little set pieces. Like
Resurrection stories.
Yeah, set pieces.
They were
good set pieces.
Yeah. So, I wonder if this guy has done anything else.
I wonder what he writes for on TV.
I looked it up. I punched him up on Wikipedia. He might be on there, but, you know, if you type in Jay Knight and Risen
or... if you try IMDb, I'll bet you could probably catch something,
yeah.
Find out what he's actually writing.
Yeah, I mean...
He's usually writer
his
credits around there.
His last name is unusual enough that you can just punch that in and you'll find him.
Exactly. It's not like Jones.
No. But I have to say, I'm glad this was recommended to us, and I'm glad I read it. It was a really interesting twist on a couple of different genres. The zombie story, it's kind of a zombie story, I guess, but...
Kind of, except that they're not obsessed with eating your brain.
No, not
they're
at
just
all.
Obsessed with murdering you.
Yeah, no, they're just... They're
to make your life better.
To make your life better.
Yeah.
To bring you to Seth.
They have died to their old life and been born anew to their new life.
Into...
They're saved.
Yeah, but there's kind of... here's the diabolical side of it. Is he really evil? Like, is Seth really, really evil? Or
what's the bad thing that happened?
Yeah.
And we all just can live forever. Everyone lives forever. The whole world suddenly lives forever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he intentionally leaves that obscure.
Oh, yeah. He never says... They don't really get into the depth of what
Seth because aside from...
Is.
I mean, aside from killing people, but he only kills people and then they come back.
Yeah, and there's no chaos after, really, except for the death of other people.
Yeah.
Which they just join them.
Yeah, and he just wants to increase his power. And, you know, how does that make him different from, you know... any other religious leader.
Or any other god.
Or politician or person.
Well, any religious leader who's blind to, you know... To other people's thoughts or ideas, or
yeah.
You know,
but what about
in,
in what about just any? What about even just Christian theology? Yes, you have a free will, but once you decide to be born again, you turn your will over to God, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that part of it? Is you turn your will? You make
no, because you can always backslide.
Yeah, but
right, but
ideally,
but ideally, you turn and then you let that God direct your life, direct the course of your life, right? Isn't that, well, what's just so different from
not
having
so different.
Set do it? I mean, what's the bad, that's what I'm saying. What's the bad thing
about Set?
About Set. Other than if you don't want to do it or...
They'll do it anyway.
Or you think it's murder.
Yeah, or I mean, can they still conceive after they're all dead? Is that possible? I mean, there are a lot of questions that never get answered.
Yeah, you don't know.
Of course, you don't know.
I would say yes. Because everything in
the
body is...
Yeah.
Because are you going to still get old, or are you not going to get old anymore?
No,
because you notice everybody starts getting better. All the people who had like problems with their limbs and all the stuff goes away.
And
exactly. Suddenly they're much better. The crazy goes away. The woman who was Irma Klempner, who was completely, totally insane.
The depression goes away.
She was fine. Of course, she couldn't. She didn't want to talk about the past anymore.
Yeah. No, you honestly don't see, aside from killing the people against their will, obviously.
Which is pretty mean.
Which is pretty mean. But, you know.
It's not a very friendly thing
to
do.
You say to them, you may disagree with me now, but I'll ask you again tomorrow and you'll think it was the best thing I ever did to you. And that is always the case. Always
and some people
the case.
Actually, here's what I find interesting. There are a couple characters who are converted before they're dead.
Right, that Galen boy is
that
one.
That Galen boy, right, who is especially evil.
I know, well, he's
a special kind of crazy.
He's kind of a special kind of petty tyrant evil.
He's a type.
Yeah.
He shows up a lot.
Yeah, yes he does, in school buses.
But speaking of red herrings, I mean, how many at this table thought maybe Reverend Small might have been the guy?
Oh, yeah.
I thought for a while I did, but then I was like, but then I started feeling like, no, this is going to be, no, this is not going to be.
Yeah.
It's not him.
It still would have worked if it was, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was too easy for Brant to get in and kill him. Yeah. I mean, come on. He just walks up. He has to kill three people to get into the space. But then, or four people, something like that. But then he gets there and he has to, so he has to avoid, you know, Reverend Small, Smith, and Wesson.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's pretty easy access to kill this dude.
The writer was making it, was dropping lots of hints that that was the case, but he was also being very careful to leave himself an out. I'm like,
of course.
He wouldn't go through the effort to leave himself an out in this case if this wasn't a red herring.
Yeah, but then what was it? What answered it? Oh, it was the answer was when they said, oh, well, the grave sites had been moved like 2 years ago. So somebody's been lying in wait in town.
So what did you think of the frame, the first and last chapters? Because I thought it was a guy. I actually forgot once.
Well, the first chapter was the guy in the water.
Yeah, and you know.
So then you're getting.
It's like, where is this? What's happening?
And
where is
Seth. This?
Is this? Yeah.
Yeah, that's Seth underwater in the reservoir. Yeah. But you don't know that, of course.
Yeah. So the whole rest of the book is a flashback to how he gets there.
Mm-hmm.
And when it finally connects and Tom throws him over the overboard. In the middle of the reservoir, they're like, oh.
I thought
that's pretty cool.
I felt like Tom was doomed.
Tom is doomed.
Truly. Even Why? Though he survived, he has not survived, really.
Yeah.
Why?
Because everything about his life prior to this, he was already having issues, calling them the Blacklands, where he would disappear off into nowhere. Yep. Remember that Tom is not kind of, he's able to kind of escape reality completely, and he just goes into this zone.
Yeah, he goes to his dark place.
His dark place. And for him, it's an actual physical dark place. I mean, I think he just kind of zones and he becomes catatonic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gets to leave it.
Smokes gobs.
But not really. Because I mean, he killed somebody. And, I mean, he was already, obviously, and his whole entire town has been destroyed. I think that he goes into a very dark place.
When Seth dies, all the rest of the people actually die then.
Everyone dies. He watches everybody die around him.
Yeah, so in a way, Tom is kind of the villain of as far as like permanent negative consequences. If he left Seth alone, all those people would still be alive.
But he'd be dead, and his mom. But his mom, I mean, she was she's
But
crazy.
If he was dead, he'd be alive again. So would the mom.
Yeah.
Exactly. If they died, they'd be alive again.
So. Exactly. So in a way, Tom is the one who kills the entire town, just like the guy in the mental house.
He re-kills them.
He re-kills the town. He makes their deaths permanent.
Yeah. And the guy in the mental institution that's in his 80s or 90s, nobody talks to him. Well, that is Tom's future.
Because he essentially killed his entire town after Seth, converted them.
Because it goes back, I think it goes back to that question, what was the big deal?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What did we gain? Like, because what was going to...
That?
We gained a really good gruesome horror story. Yeah.
No, but I mean, within... Right, you can always say that, but I mean within the context of the story,
mm-hmm.
what is gained
in
the story by killing Seth and killing the whole town?
Yeah.
What do you get?
Yeah, and you never know.
You get an ending.
That's what the strength is.
That's the story. Within the story.
But it's funny because the ending is the beginning, right?
Yes.
Really, because this has happened before.
Yeah.
So how long is it going to be before the reservoir is empty?
I know it's a reservoir. It's dammed up somewhere. That dam
exactly.
Will go.
If that dam goes, guess who's free?
Or the chains rust, or the
exactly. This is not a permanent fix in a way. Yeah. I mean, and part of it's because of obviously Tom's a kid. When it happens, mm-hmm. it's a smart idea, but eventually bodies float.
Yeah,
even demon bodies.
Chains will rust or something like that. No, but I mean it's horrible. Just, can you imagine like waking up at midnight for a century, realizing that you're gonna have
your
to drown
legs
again.
Are broken. Like remember how he was buried, broken legs. His legs re-break every time he wakes
every,
up.
Every time he wakes up.
Horrible.
Ouchie.
Ouch. It's like in do you ever watch Torchwood?
I haven't seen that show.
The character Jack is given immortality, and can heal very quickly.
Okay.
But he gets buried alive for 100 years or 200 years. So he dies, he reconstitutes, he dies, he reconstitutes for 200 years over.
Stabs to death and reconstitutes or suffocates
for 200 years or at least dug up again.
That is
also horror in a way. I mean, that's really like, awful. Of course, Seth's going to be, you know, ticked.
Yeah.
Drowning, I mean, seriously, 60 years, but being buried in a box and then suffocating and your legs breaking every day for 60 years, that's a long time. How many days is that? That's a lot.
Every night.
That's over 1,000.
So would you take, if you were in this town and it was offered to you, would you take it?
No.
The opportunity?
Why? Because this is now we'll get into the motivation.
Because I like living. And I don't want to die. I don't want to die.
No. Well, you will die. But
of course I will. But I don't want to like usher it in.
But if that meant you got to not be dead and have all your aches and pains go away and all your
that's a good question.
That's the question. If somebody posed that to you and said that is you would die for a moment and then
die to your old self and.
Oh, here's something, actually.
Would you take it?
No, I would not.
Because why?
Because I don't trust it.
Say more about that, because this is the motivation.
Yeah,
what is it?
I guess that's for me, too.
It's the thing that I don't like about get rich quick schemes or soap commercials or... No money down financing and religion. It's people trying to sell you something.
That looks good.
And death is not really cheatable. So these people, they may be alive, but they're dead.
Yeah.
Well, are they?
Yes, they are.
How are they dead?
Because they're only alive because of one
on the sufferance of Seth.
Well, but we could say that just about life anyway, right? We're only alive. We're only a breath away from not being alive.
Something that really interested me about this book, and I kept kind of asking this question in the back of my head, was about the soul. Like, what happens to the soul? Yeah. Like, is, you know, this whole concept of the soul, like, this is something that's been running around in the human mind for hundreds and thousands of years, really. Well, hundreds of years, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thousands of years, possibly. Mm-hmm. You know, because even back, you
at least
know,
a couple thousand.
Just in AD, you know, 10 or whatever, mm-hmm. they were already talking about like what is the soul and mm-hmm. how it is and how what it means to have a soul. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that just kept kind of popping into the back of my head, like, do these people actually still have a soul?
So what if they did? What if they did still have a soul?
Because the thing is, they come back and they're still the same.
Then would it make a difference to
you? That's creepy. That kind of freaked me out a little bit.
I mean,
but they were a soul under bondage, basically. Like, they're bonded to Seth.
Aren't we a soul under bondage anyway? Aren't we?
Yeah, because if your soul's removed, well, does that make you inanimate?
I mean, if your soul even now know. Isn't your soul under
it's a good question, though.
The bondage of matter, the bondage.
Yeah, yeah, you're chained to your meat bag.
Yeah,
chained to
or
your
to
meat
the,
bag.
Or to the
soft soul. Thank you.
Yeah, or to the
your
system
job.
That runs your yeah. The system that runs your country, your job, the economy, you're chained all over the place.
Yeah,
so.
No, I mean, the one of the reasons that I like this book as much as I do is because all these arguments that you're, all these devil's advocates arguments that you're making,
mm-hmm.
You're asking us questions that we honestly can't defend in this book.
Exactly,
because
they keep it open.
Because Seth is right. He's absolutely right. But he's also wrong.
But that,
yeah.
But that's the thing I'm wondering about. If he's absolutely right, what is it?
You want to know
what is it that has you inside going? But I wouldn't take
the
deal.
Clues. I think the clues are in the children. You realize in the little boy Josh, the little boy who has the gun, when they go to the house and he tries to kill them.
All right.
Tries to kill Brant and Tom and Peg,
mm-hmm.
Or Tom and Peg, I guess it is. And they finally, you know, restrain the kid. And he's like, you're going to be in so much trouble. Seth's going to kill you. And you're not going to survive. Blah, 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 blah. And they see in his face
mm-hmm.
a picture of evil, basically, in this child. Because the child, as an adult, you kind of, you know, mm-hmm. life is
you
obviously...
Mask it, yeah.
You mask it. You mask the evil. I mean, there are many people who do this very well.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, this
child...
Me too. Totally. My evil is well masked. But
what is the... But the question you're not answering is, what is the evil?
Exactly. Well, Josh, what is the evil? Is just pure evil, though, right? Because he has this evil look, and he just wants to kill, and he can't mask it at all. And there's no. This is a great place for you to go. It's you're going to be dead. Yeah. That's what he says. He's dead.
I would say the only,
it's a portent.
I would say the only evil in this book is that Galen boy, who has not yet been converted, passing the elderly couple in the car, turning around and running into them head on of his own free will.
That's pretty evil.
But that was before any of that happened.
I know. Yeah. He was willing.
Yep. He was.
A bad seed anyway.
He was a bad seed.
Even before Seth came.
And I think he
murdered.
And I think, in as much as he willingly converted, he knew what he was doing, and bought into Seth's system. That is really the only evidence that the book gives you that Seth is evil.
Yeah, because Galen's the only one who goes of his own volition.
But think about how many people convert to other religions and still do really horrible things.
Oh, yeah, no. So exactly right.
Does that make the...
No, Seth's program is a perfect religion.
Here's another example, though. Okay, so in the mind of humanity, we think suicide is an evil thing to do, right?
Unless you're Japanese,
and then you're defending your honor, your family's honor, whatever.
Yeah.
But for the most part, most of the world says, "Oh, suicide is wrong."
Yeah.
What is her name? I can't think of her name right now. Murdered herself. She committed suicide after her husband came. Right, yeah. Carl. Right.
Yeah.
He comes back to life. She's like, "Oh man, I can't do this." So she shoots herself, kills herself. She comes back. So that's another evil portent. That it's like, oh, these bad people. Why are the first people who come back like really bad people? Carl, a guy who beats his wife all the time, he's the first one to come back. Another portent.
Yeah.
That there's evil behind this because not the good people are coming back.
Yeah,
it's the bad people.
You're right because your people are as hard as it is to say, sometimes when people die. Kind of solves problems, however they go.
Yeah, like Carl. Yeah, he was a bad dude.
And if that is not an option anymore,
in my mind, that doesn't point to evil. But the first people that die are the troubled people.
Right. So
at any rate, that's as far as we can go answering those questions. But we're not going to let you get away without you trying to answer those questions.
Oh no, I wouldn't take it at all. Of course I wouldn't.
No.
I think for the reasons you
imply,
it's like, because in my mind, the way the world works is nothing, there's no free lunch. So all these great things you're offering me, what's the catch? And I can't go back.
Yeah.
You know, if there's an escape clause, fine.
Yeah. I mean, the catch is,
I'll try it out for a while, but
yeah, and the catch is that they're utterly dependent on him being around and his goodwill. And so when he's gone, the whole town just drops dead.
Yes, sure, but you know what? That's life anyway. We're utterly dependent on a couple things.
Yeah, it's like you're gonna
drop dead anyway.
Yeah, we're utterly dependent on the fact that volcano is not gonna erupt.
But if it's the idea that if the idea is that by doing this, you know, is there an evil, a hidden evil that comes in the world that is unyet named, and will I be a participant in it because I've chosen this?
Yeah.
But then a part of me goes, well, we already do that anyway.
Yeah. Here's a question.
We've already bring evil into the world. We've asked
this question of each other in the past, not as far as like this kind of zombie revenant resurrection thing, but would you willingly let yourself be converted to vampire?
Well, some people
we've never asked that.
Some people who are in love with Edward Cullen would.
It depends what kind of vampire.
OMG!
It depends what kind of vampire.
Team Edward.
Is it a Bram Stoker vampire? Brian Lumley vampire?
Stephanie Meyer vampire?
Yeah, which kind of vampire is it? Is it a vampire's assistant vampire?
these are important questions.
Is it an Anne Rice vampire?
Interview with a Vampire?
Yeah, Anne Rice vampire.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, And I think
would I come back as a Cullen vampire? Maybe.
Yeah.
A sparkly.
Yeah. Honestly. Yeah.
Sparkly unicorn loving.
Unicorn loving.
Sparkle, sparkle.
Sparkly vampire. A Bram Stoker vampire? Probably not.
No.
Anne Rice vampire?
Just think about how
probably.
Your life would be filled with joy and joyness. And
yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So it's funny because it's not that different, though. I mean, viewed objectively. If you just like you write down the columns, of you know, list of on two different columns, you know, Seth resurrection or Anne Rice.
Well, except the only difference would be is that in the Anne Rice or even the Stephanie Meyer vampires, any of those vampires, there isn't just one creature keeping the whole group alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, there isn't, you know, if something goes horribly wrong with that one person, you're sort of a free agent,
right?
In that, and you are still limited in other ways. You're limited depending upon the mythology that's put forth, you know, by
right.
Kind of like what's the name of that? There's the show True Blood, I think it
True
is.
True Blood, yeah.
Would you be a True Blood vampire? Would you be a True Blood vampire?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
Or just drink off some willing cattle.
Willing cattle.
Human cattle.
Oh.
What would you do it? Would
the
you
vampire
become
thing?
A vampire?
Honestly, well, I'm going to say no at the same time, but I'm going to say it's a lot more tempting.
It's more tempting.
It's a way more tempting because it's such a genteel life.
It is so genteel,
except for the whole sucking of blood thing.
All those puffy velvet sleeves.
Besides the ripping of flesh and sucking of their blood.
I wouldn't become a Buffy the Vampire because vampires...
Oh, I know, they're mean.
Yeah, because a demon basically enters.
Yeah.
They're basically a demon.
Yeah.
I don't think I would do that.
I don't know. I think some people already are vampires.
Well, of course.
I've met them.
Yes,
no,
there
you
are
know
tons.
What I mean.
I do.
Metaphorically speaking, of course.
So,
what's the difference between that and being an actual vampire? I don't know.
Well, you know what? All this talk about drinking makes me thirsty.
Ah.
Do you know what time it is?
I do declare it is cocktail time.
Yay!
So let's
do it. All right, we're gonna do a little. We're gonna tell you the name right off the bat here because this is in honor of Deputy Hawes.
Yes.
This is a little drink that we're gonna call the gut shot.
Gut shot.
Gut shot. And what's in a gut shot? Take a shot glass.
Uh huh.
And take a couple of pomegranate seeds. You know. Those juicy seeds, put them in the bottom of there and just smash them up a little bit.
So they're kind of, you know,
mm-hmm.
ripped apart, kind of bloody.
Then I'm going to say put a dash of bitters in there. Whatever kind of bitters you want. Angostura is fine, but, you know, play with it. You know, whatever you want to shoot your gut with.
And I say put a little thimble full of pomegranate juice. Actual pomegranate juice.
And I would after the liquor's poured, do a little lemon twist.
Nice. Very nice. So and then
maybe flame a lemon on
it. So you got some crushed pomegranate berry seeds and a little bit of pomegranate juice, like a bitters if you want. And then sort of top off the shot with bullet bourbon.
Oh yeah.
and then we'll put a little twist of lemon on top of there and then just shoot it.
Yeah, I'd also suggested possibly putting a spent round, a slug, into the bottom of the drink, but Mike said no on that.
I think drink it with a bullet in your mouth already.
Exactly.
Between your teeth.
Yeah. So there it is.
There you go.
There it is, the gut shot.
1, 2, 3.
Okay, now that we're down here, what are we going to read?
I don't know. I'm not inspired.
Actually, this was a tough one. I think we should read something. We should, like, push the edges of the envelope.
So you don't like my reading the best of...
The
best of Necronomipod.
The best of Necronomipod.
We could run a clip show. All of our wittiest.
Do you remember that time when we said this? There was a ghost in my kitchen sink.
So funny. Well, we could do.
Do you want to sell me a book? Because I can just do this online.
And remember that one time when.
So anyway.
Yeah.
So let's just pull this book off the shelf.
All right.
This book has been sitting on my shelf, and I want to read it. It is Bone Shaker by Cherry Priest, or Sherry Priest.
Cherie. We don't know.
And it is probably Priest. It is probably more sci-fi than horror, and it is probably more...
So be prepared!
It is probably more steampunk than sci-fi, but it's got zombies in it, so that counts.
Zombies!
That counts.
Delicious brains! Zombies.
Everything goes better with zombies.
Everything does go better with zombies. So there you go. Sherry Priest's Bone Shaker. That's what we're going to read.
All right, very good. Right, let's get the hell out of here.
It's dank.
Okay, we're back. So, anything more about this book? Do I got nothing?
I got nothing either. You have not swayed me from my estimation that this was a book much worth reading, and I'm very grateful that it was for the opportunity to do so. Steered us toward it. It's a book that I think deserves a higher more of a reputation than it has. I mean, it's unknown. It's an unknown book.
I would like it if people in our...
Well, it's known to us.
Yeah.
And you people.
I would like it if,
lucky readers,
the one or two people who are listening to this podcast would comment on the question, if you had the choice, would you become a vampire? And you pick the vampire mythology. I'd be curious to see if people would do it.
I had the choice to become an elf like Legolas, I would totally do it.
You would be an elf?
Yeah, elf I would definitely magic. Be an elf. But not so much
You can
the
get
vampire.
That eat by eating Keebler cookies.
Really?
Elf and magic,
yes. They're
but I'd also get very magic. Pudgy and plump.
You'd become a gnome. If you had to choose between an elf or a gnome, which would you pick?
Elf.
If you had to pick between an elf and a golem, what would you pick?
Elf.
If you had to pick between an elf and a hobbit.
Elf.
How about an elf and a wizard?
This is
like a Harry Potter, wizard.
Elf.
I pick a wizard.
But if I had to choose between elf and unicorn, unicorn.
What do you mean this is going nowhere?
This is going everywhere.
If you could choose between an egg roll and a spring roll, which would you become?
Spring roll.
Okay. If you could choose between...
That's like I had this point.
If you could choose between a dog dish or a cat litter box, which would you become?
Dog dish. That's like a...
If you could choose between green and orange.
Orange,
of course you'd be orange.
That's like when I was... one of my boyfriends who said that he loved me, I said, if I had all my qualities of who I am right now but was a potato, would you still love me? And he said no. And I got really, really upset. Because it would still be me. That was a potato.
You deserve the answer that you got. What he should have done is he should have slapped you and said, I will see you tomorrow.
Potato head.
What he should have said was slap me. What he should have said, au gratin, mashed, or hashed.
Twice baked.
Twice all right. Baked.
Anyway,
I would definitely go potato.
We have definitely run this one straight the hell into the ground.
Lori Lewis, thank you for joining it.
Thank
Will you.
You
be joining us on Bone Shaker?
I don't know. I'll definitely be reading it.
All right. Then maybe you should join us since you're not going to be with us for long.
Yeah.
I know. I should.
We'll immortalize you.
Yeah, you'll be here for a couple months.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I'm around this spring.
Excellent.
Not on tour again until June.
We're going to try to have this read within a month.
We'll have it read within a month. All right.
All right.
Woo-hoo.
All right. Very good.
Okay. Well, love you. Bye bye.
Oh wait. Let's put a stake in it.
Okay. And then shoot it in the stomach. And then
wait for the gut rot to happen.
Wait for midnight, and then we can do it all over again.
That'd be fun. All right. Very good.
Bye.
Bye. Wow, one take.